Blog Talk Radio.
Have you heard of Tacit Aerobics? Now you can build muscle, burn fat, and enjoy the benefits of jogging a mile and a half in just 10 minutes. That's right. You can accomplish your fitness goals easier than you've ever dreamed. With the state-of-the-art Vibe Pro and Qi Pro fitness machines that are lightweight and small enough for any home or office, if you sit most of the day and want a great workout, or if you suffer from tight muscles from your exercise program, you will benefit from these body-balancing machines that the Hollywood stars use to feel and look great. For the best you, go to besthealthgallery.com. Best products, prices, and service, that's besthealthgallery.com. Or call 480-888-6548. 480-888-6548. Build muscle, burn fat, and enjoy the benefits of jogging a mile and a half in just 10 minutes. Call 480-888-6548. besthealthgallery.com.
Be a part of the next big technological breakthrough. Hi, I'm William Alec, President and CEO of Aurora Tech, a.k.a. Dr. Houdini on Vortex Network News. Free energy and anti-gravity technology now being developed at Aurora Tech will change the way we live and bring about a golden age for all mankind. Our motto, simply the most advanced technology on planet Earth. To get involved with great opportunities at Aurora Tech, please check out our website, auroratech.us. That's auroratech.us. auroratech.us. And call 480-474-4388. 480-474-4388. Simply the most advanced technology on planet Earth. auroratech.us.
Conspiracies, cover-ups, suppressed technology, UFOs, and extraterrestrial contact. Vortex Network News with your hosts, Aurora Light and Dr. Houdini.
Live from Scottsdale, Arizona, you're listening to Vortex Network News, and I am your host this evening, Dr. Houdini. I want to mention to our listening audience that Aurora Light is taking the night off, and I will be your host. All right, well, let's get into it, huh? Well, incredible things here are happening at Aurora Tech. Yes, we're having many visitors at our location here in Scottsdale. So if you would like to visit our location here in Scottsdale, I suggest you give Aurora Light a call, and that phone number is 480-474-4388, and arrange your visit. And yes, we do have many people visiting our facility here in Scottsdale, Arizona, checking us out here, folks, and seeing what we're up to. And of course, we show them our various test benches, our lab that we have set up here. We have a sewing room set up to do the fabrication of the Vitality Pad. And incidentally, I suggest you, the listening audience out there, to visit our website and check out our products page. Yes, we are offering products now, folks. And when you do so, what you will see, just go to the products page here. Let me type it in on the Mac. All right, auroratech.us. The main web page comes up. And what you'll see on the web page is that we do have some events coming up that you can stop by our booth, check us out, attend the conferences. And let me tell you, folks, this is going to be a very exciting year for conferences. And the latest one is in May. And I'll get to that a little later on in the show here, the various conferences. As I mentioned before here, check out our products page. So go ahead and click on a products button, and that takes you to our main products page. And what you'll see up there at the top of the page, left-hand side, you see our Fast Grow technology. To the right, Vitality Pad. Below the Fast Grow is, of course, our water restructuring technology. To the right of that is our BioDisc. Now, that's new. I just added some content just in the past few days. Below water and restructuring is our Go Power Up technology, and then that is currently in the works here. More information will come in later shows about our breakthrough our free energy over unity technology. And also, I'll be talking about that at the upcoming conferences. Yes, I will be filing a provisional patent on our breakthrough transformer technology. So all this amazing work that I am doing, thank you, is all coming to fruition here. And we'll be filing a patent very soon and working on Go Power Up products. ARV, anti-gravity technology, that of course is in future development here. Warp drive engines, that's below the Go Power Up button here. That also is in future development. And I will be actually talking about this, giving a introductory lecture at the conference here. Yeah, this volume control. Let me adjust the volume. All right, there we go. And let me adjust the output audio here. Okay, I got to make a few adjustments here, folks. This this audio on the microphone has its own mind, so to speak. So I got to make some adjustments here. All right. Okay. Warp drive engine, Star Trek. Yes, Rortec is about manifesting this technology. And warp drive engines, I will be talking about that this summer at the Coffee Conference, which is a co-conference to the Tesla Tech, the Extraordinary Technology Conference. Now, I'll get into a little more detail a little later on here. To the right on the products page of warp drive engines is, of course, our novelty technology. And these are little projects that I've been researching here. And when you click on that button, it will take you to a little project here that I call the Pumupunku H-Block 3D Puzzle, which is something that I got into and got quite fascinated with this. And I made some very interesting observations. And I'm going to bring this to attention of some of the researchers here at the this upcoming lecture here in Sedona called Cosmic Origins. And Aurora Light and I will be there. We have a table already lined up there. It's a three-day conference in Sedona, May 26th through the 28th. So I'll get into a bit more detail about that later on in the show. But yeah, you can take a look at this novelty technology here because it's ancient technology, and the engineering of these stone blocks is just incredible. Okay, so getting back to the products webpage. All right. And then below that, you'll see accessories. Must have gear. So what I'm doing here is listing all the pricing of the technology that we currently have available. And The interesting one here is, of course, the bioenergy disc. And this really forms the basis of what we're doing here at Aurora Tech, because what we discovered is really a new source of energy. And the idea, or perhaps earlier discoveries that I've heard, you know, the past couple of decades here, and when you talk to some of these old-time researchers, you know, like Tom Bearden, for example, he talked about them quite a bit. He even wrote a book, Energy from the Vacuum. And just the title alone, he is absolutely correct. Okay, energy does come from the vacuum. And a lot of people out there think that really energy comes from the breakup of atoms, that somehow the matter that make up atoms is what we're harnessing. You know, E equals MC squared. So what that really means is that with nuclear physicists, they look at mass. They take the mass of, you know, for example, uranium. What is it, 238? And when you fission that material, in other words, you just break it apart, right? Well, there's a tremendous amount of energy released. And nuclear physicists will tell you that, well, there is a some of that mass that went to make up a uranium atom, of course, breaks up the atom. And so some of that mass is converted directly into energy. And so you get a very large boom out of that fissioning process of nuclear energy. Okay, but it's very dirty. Okay, when you work with fission, it's a very, very dangerous and dirty process, because the fallout, working with nuclear processes, it's not clean at all. And so what you end up with is a lot of this radioactive debris, fallout, that can contaminate very large areas. And I think we're still suffering from that, even from the all the testing they did back in the, the late 40s and 50s of other atomic and nuclear explosions, you know, their hydrogen bombs going off. And we're really still suffering from that contamination. I mean, we're still seeing fallout from that. And then, of course, the latest disaster out there, which is really, you can kind of think of that as an extermination event, okay? An extinction-level event is, of course, Fukushima. And you very rarely hear anything about it, you know, on the evening news, what is being done. You know, this is a killer, folks. What happened there in Japan back in 2011? When was that? In March, I think it was March of 2011. Was of course an extinction level event, and it's been pretty well hushed up by the mainstream science and the media. I mean, they just don't talk about this extermination event that's going on. It is literally contaminating the entire Pacific Ocean. I mean, you only need just one atom. Isn't that what they say? With plutonium, inhaling just one atom of plutonium is a killer. You know, we're dealing with something here that's very, very dangerous. You know, nuclear energy is of course very, very dangerous. Now, what we're doing here at Aurora Tech is that what we discovered here is a new source of energy. And that's why I want to get into it this July at the Extraordinary Technology Conference. And yes, Steve Ellswick invited me to participate as a lecturer at his 2017 event, which incidentally is going to be held in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And if for some reason you cannot attend the event due to some circumstances, you can order videos. And I know Steve is also putting those videos online. You'll be able to order them online with a direct, I think it's through Vimeo. You can, and it's like $3 or $4 to watch the video presentation. Now, I just received Steve's latest conference here. Let's see, where's the... Thought I had it here. Heck is it? I had it, then I lost it. It's his magazine. And his magazine generally comes out about this time of the year. Great articles, folks. If you can become a member of the Extraordinary Technology Conference, you get his magazine, and his magazine. I love his magazine. I love Steve's publication. There's a lot of great information in there. A lot of great stories, some technical information, source books for your education. So what Steve has is a great publication for information, you know, on this subject, you know, this Tesla technology. And it'll get you hip on what's happening today. I believe last year's issue, I think, had my article. Either last year or year before, I forget which one. But yes, I have written for his magazine. So it's a great publication. I highly recommend signing up the Extraordinary Technology. Become a member. And Steve's phone number is 520-463-1994. So to become a Tesla Tech member today, just give Steve a call at 520-463-1994, and you'll receive his magazine. And again, you know, it's a fantastic publication. I just love reading all the fascinating work that is going on. Now, he also provided an overview of of his conference that's coming up in July. And I'll probably see what time is it? 18 after. I'll probably get into this maybe right after the break that's coming up here shortly. And so we'll get into the various conferences that are coming up here. Okay, so let's get back to the products page. I was talking about our amazing Aurora Tech products. And yes, we are introducing them. We also have single piece pricing. Now that's the list price. And if you give Aurora a call and tell her that you need a deal. Okay. Tell her that you want to make a deal. And she'll work something out so that she can discount the price on our products. And that's what people have been doing. We've sold a number of the Vitality pads and the water restructuring technology. And the fast grow technology, Yes, we are in contact with various sorts of growers around Arizona and Colorado here. And so we do plan to be shipping that product here very soon. The bioenergy disc, that's for OEM people. Now, that's original equipment manufacturers. So if you click on that page, just scroll down, and you'll see some interesting information here. These discs can be embedded in various sorts of products. You know, for example, manufacturers may want to embed our technology in their furniture. Okay, they can embed it in clothing, in car seats, that sort of thing. So our technology here, which is shown on the webpage, you can check it out here, is it's available in various energy levels. And when you get to the section here that says how it works, this is probably the most fascinating part of our technology. Because really, not too many other places you'll find on the internet has any of this technology really figured out. I mean, what is a negative energy field? What is that? Well, it all works out in mathematics, and I'll be getting into that in July. Called the lecture that I'll be giving, it's called The Physics of Free Energy Over Unity Transformers. And this is where I'm going to break it down and get into what we call a magnetic dampening field. That's what we call it, a magnetic dampening field. And I do plan to post a video explaining what this is. There is one on the internet. Yes, you will find a video on the internet. I forget the name of that website. But I do plan to put up my own little experiment here. Going into detail here, explain exactly what that is. You know, what is a magnetic dampening field? Because everyone knows what a magnetic field is. All right? I mean, you've played around with magnets before, and you know how they can be attractive or repulsive, dependent upon the orientation of the magnetic poles, all right, whether it's a north pole or a south pole. And, of course, when magnets are in the repulsive configuration, it can be north-north or south-south. That is what we're working with here. That is really the core of our technology, because when you take these magnets and you force them together, mathematically what happens is that this creates what's called a complex magnetic field. And what happens is that when you force these magnets together, what we call the real field, a real magnetic field around that magnet, quite literally vanishes. Well, where does it go? Well, according to our mathematics, what it does is that it curls right into complex space. Now, Dirac, of course, Dirac was a physicist back in the 1920s. He was quite famous back then. Dr. Paul Dirac, you can look him up on the internet, came out with his amazing Dirac theory. And the result of his theory, the solution of the Dirac equation, and you'll find this, just Google solution to the Dirac equation. And what you discover is E equals plus or minus mc squared. Now, many people have heard of E equals mc squared. I talked about a little while ago when nuclear fission occurs, you have a mass conversion occurring that converts a little tiny bit of that mass into a tremendous amount of energy due to the fact that a little bit of mass is multiplied by the speed of light squared. And that gives you a huge amount of energy locked away in the mass of atoms, for example. So if we fission uranium, we're really only converting a small amount of that uranium into energy, a mass to energy conversion. And so that releases a tremendous amount of energy. E equals mc squared, which was an equation. When you look at the history of E equals mc squared, a lot of people associate that little tiny equation with Einstein. But Einstein didn't come up with that equation. It actually came up in the 1890s in some work. You can probably find that on the internet somewhere. The history of E equals mc squared. Because I know I talked about that in lectures. Okay, the Dirac solution, E equals mc squared, was first introduced by a physicist by the name of Oliver Heaviside back in 1890. But his derivation of E equals mc squared did not have the negative sign. And, of course, this negative sign comes out with the Dirac solution, okay? E equals plus or minus mc squared. And so when Dirac introduced his equation, E equals plus or minus mc squared, the physics community really didn't know what to do with it. They really panicked over the plus or minus because the minus sign was very, very troublesome, because what that means is that you can have a negative mass, and a negative mass means negative energy. So they really didn't want to deal with that. I mean, they literally panicked over that. And so they invented some mathematics, which incidentally later proved to be false, of eliminating the minus sign on the solution to the Dirac equation, E equals plus or minus mc squared. So science today really only deals with the positive component, okay, E equals plus mc squared. So they really threw away the negative mass, negative energy component. Now what we're doing here at AuroraTech is that we put that back in. And lo and behold, the equations still work out, folks. You can still have a negative mass, negative energy, and the equations calculate out correctly. And I'm working on some papers here that will show that you can use classical equations, which not only work at the macro scale, all right, at the macro scale, but they also work at the quantum level. So really, you can think of these so-called classic equations as quantum-level equations, and they still work very well. And so when you do these calculations, you find out that you're dealing with something that is not in the real world. Because what we describe as real, we describe that the universe that we live in has three dimensions and a half a dimension of time forward. And that's all there is. I mean, that's generally what physics and the rest of the world consider as the real universe are three dimensions and a half a dimension of time, the time forward component. Well, what about the reverse time component? Did you leave that out? And it turns out that you have something called complex space, something that is at right angles to our real 3D space, complex space. And mathematically, that works out perfectly, you know, with the old equations. And so I will be talking about that in July at the upcoming conference. And, you know, I made some very interesting discoveries. And again, you just don't hear about this in mainstream science. And yet they've known about this for literally decades. But nobody really talks about it. And that is, you know, when I started working out my equations, I discovered on my own that the electron, for example, there is no internal mass. As a matter of fact, there's nothing inside the electron, completely empty, folks. There's no field. There's no magnetic, electric. There's no mass inside of the electron. So wait a minute. What's going on here? Well, it turns out that, you know, when we talk about electric and magnetic fields, the mass of the electron, it's all on the outside of the electron. And that's just the way the calculations work out. So in other words, the electron, it has no volume, and yet it has a surface area. All right. The electron has a surface area of charge. What is this mysterious component called charge? And it turns out that this other researcher, Nissim Harriman, is doing a lot of work at the Planck scale, working with what's called Planck spheres. And, of course, the Planck sphere is what is generally referred to as the Planck length, a very, very, very tiny number. And it is just so small, it makes the electron look enormous. And you know how small the electron is, right? And that's current flowing through a wire. You can have, 10 to the 24th electrons flowing through a wire. And that is only, 1 amp of current? From 10 to the 24th electrons. So imagine at that scale, at the Planck scale, where the electron looks enormous, okay? It'd be, if you did it on an astronomical scale, all right, it'd be like, okay, you have something, an electron the size of the Earth. Well, this Planck scale would be so tiny, it'd be like the size of a grain of sand. I mean, the scale is just enormous, all right? Okay, so the Planck scale, Nissim Harriman talks about the Planck length, Planck time. It's really the frame rate. Think of it as the frame rate of the universe. And there's a lot of theory going on at the quantum level, that we live in a computer simulation and it's ticking along at a frame length, at a frame rate of the what's called the Planck time. You can look this up on the internet. Just type in Planck, P-L-A-N-C-K, time. Look it up on the internet and it tells you what the frame rate of the universe is. So some people think that we're living inside of a computer, computer simulation, okay, that has this tick rate called the Planck time. So what Nassim Harriman talks about quite a bit is what's generally referred to as Planck spheres that can literally fill the interior of an electron, for example, or what his work mainly deals with are protons. And he apparently written a paper on this subject. Now, I'm taking this, his subject, further, okay, and kind of melding it into Dirac theory, because what we see is this phenomena called time reversal. And before I get into time reversal, we have to take a break, all right, because this is heavy stuff. You can go and grab a hot tea. I have a little bit of coffee in front of me here. And we're going to take a short break. So let's take five, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Vortex Network News, and I am your host this evening, Dr. Houdini. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to Vortex Network News. I am your host this evening, Dr. Houdini. And so, folks, we're getting into the physics of our technology here, our breakthrough technology here at Aurora Tech. And I want to mention to our listening audience here that, yes, I will be talking about the physics of free energy over unity transformers at this conference in July. Okay, so the core of our technology, what are we dealing with here? Well, we're dealing with something called a magnetic dampening field. And so what is that? What is a magnetic dampening field? Because there's only two places where you hear about dampening fields, right? In an episode of Star Trek, they frequently talk about dampening fields. I recall one episode that I managed to record. It's a great episode of Star Trek. I mean, it was fantastic. I loved it. And I believe it was called The Menagerie. And it involved a shuttle crew crash landing on an asteroid somewhere deep in outer space. And of course, James Kirk and Spock and McCoy, they were all aboard. And they crash land on this asteroid. They were actually brought to this they were kidnapped by an alien force. Kidnapped them. They were in a shuttle. And so they were brought to this asteroid. And on this asteroid, they encountered a human. Just out of nowhere, you know. We're placed down on the surface of this asteroid, and this human comes along and introduces himself as Zefren Cochrane, the inventor of the warp drive. So that was I loved that episode. It was great. The inventor of the warp drive engine. And so And what was interesting about it is that they couldn't escape. They could not escape. Their ship did not work at all. It was essentially their power source was completely or drained or whatever. They couldn't figure it out. And, of course, Zefren said, oh, there's a dampening field here. Will shut down your craft. But you see, once the dampening field is removed, all the power comes back. You know, the device or their power source is basically alive again. And so you hear about this in Star Trek. You also hear about this, a dampening field, in the UFO phenomena. So in other words, when a craft approaches, let's say, one of our cars, and you saw this in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, for example. That's a very good example is Close Encounters of the Third Kind, you know, that Steven Spielberg movie made back in the 1980s. That when this UFO craft approached Dreyfus, the star of that movie was an actor by the name of Dreyfus. Played one of the main characters in that movie. He played I believe it was either a telephone or a power repair man, and he was out at a remote site, and one of these UFOs came over his truck, and he completely lost power in his truck. But as soon as the UFO moved away, all the power came back on his vehicle, you know, as if he was in the presence of a dampening field. And so that's exactly what we're working with here. Our technology produces a dampening field effect. And I'm going to produce a video here very shortly, get that uploaded, and you can actually see the effects of a magnetic dampening field, you know, and what it does, and how you can apply it to a power system and remove that dampening field, all of a sudden the power comes back. You know, what's going on here? Well, it turns out that that dampening field is interacting with electric current. And that, of course, is the basis of what I'm going to be talking about here this July at the Extraordinary Technology Conference, the Physics of Free Energy and Over-Unity Transformers. And so what I'll do is read the abstract, okay, that I sent to Steve here, and which will be the subject of my lecture. And so the abstract goes something like this. A typical alternating current, or AC, transformer utilizes a principle of transferring electrical energy called mutual electromagnetic induction. This effect, described as Faraday's law of induction, which was first published in 1831, folks, permits a near equal amount of real power to be transferred between the input coil and the output coil. The near equal amount is the result of imperfections or losses in the transformer, causing the efficiency of the same transformer to approach but never exceed 100%. And so this is what's taught in all the universities, really across the world here, is that transformers, this one paragraph describes the operation of a transformer. Okay? You can never have 100% efficiency with a traditional transformer because there are imperfections in that transformer. So in other words, you have wire resistance. You have magnetic leakage that occurs with the insulation. You have transformer core losses, where they set up little eddy currents that act against the power that you're putting into that transformer. So the efficiency can never be 100%. Now, continuing with this abstract, it says in the mid-1980s, a researcher by the name of Floyd Sweet developed a breakthrough transformer he called the Space Quantum Modulator, SQM, and later renamed the Vacuum Triode Amplifier, the VTA, by researcher Tom Bearden. The transformer had an efficiency exceeding 1,000,000%. Mainstream physics could not explain how this was possible. So shrouded in secrecy, because Floyd kept it his big secret, right? The operation of Floyd's free energy over unity transformer, or VTA, device was not understood until now. Now, in 2002, an article published in Infinite Energy magazine, that was Eugene Mallow's publication, Infinite Energy magazine, authored by D.L. Hodgson, revealed how the VTA operates utilizing what is called the Dirac-C of negative energy. The key to understanding how free energy over unity transformers work is through the application of a negative work function applied to the transformer. This negative work function is created using magnets forced together in an opposing field configuration. Well, this is the core of our technology. Okay, this is where we apply opposing magnetic forces. Now, what happens here with these opposing forces acting on electrons? Well, the opposing field action causes the magnetic field density, all right, to curl into what's called Dirac complex space. Okay, this is your negative mass, negative energy component of the Dirac equation. It now becomes a complex number. This is how we represent hyperspace, because all of a sudden, you know, fields, they take on a reality that's no longer in our real 3D space. It's in this complex space. And so continuing with this description that I have here, okay, the real field, the magnetic field density, curls into Dirac complex space, causing the field to become complex. So the magnetic field density, B, now becomes JB, which is a complex number. J is a square root of a negative 1. Nobody really knows how to take the square root of a negative 1. So we represent it with the letter either J or I. You'll see it in mathematics. The square root of a negative 1 is represented as a complex number, okay, as either the letter I or the letter J. I prefer using the letter J because I is used to describe electric current. Okay, so the field becomes now a complex field. In other words, it's no longer in real space. The field is no longer in real space. Now, a complex number can include a real number. And you'll see that typically in a lot of mathematical equations. In other words, there's a real component and a complex number that, you know, J, you know, some numerical number plus J and then some numerical number. There's a real and a complex component. So it can exist partially in our real world and partially in complex space. Okay? So we represent that as a complex equation. And so we can also look at that as a rotation that occurs with the electron. The electron is capable, and you'll see this in Tom Bearden's publications, in his books, that an electron can rotate 720 degrees. Well, wait a minute, 720 degrees. Because you have 360 degrees in our real 3D space, right? 360 degrees. But you also have 360 degrees in complex space. So the electron, and you'll find this again in Tom Bearden's publication, that the electron can rotate 720 degrees. And so we can represent that as a complex equation, okay? And I'll get into that in my lecture in July, okay, the physics of free energy over unity transformers. Okay. Getting back to the abstract. Now, it says here that this in turn forces the input electric current to become a complex electric current. So in other words, this forcing function that we're applying to this transformer is acting on the electric current passing through the input side of this transformer. And so this forcing function, this negative forcing function, is acting on the electric current, the electrons in that current, to curl or to rotate into complex space. And so what we end up with is a complex current. Now, because of this action, what is observed on a typical ammeter, that of course is an amp meter, is a significant reduction of the real electric current, because now we have a complex equation occurring here. The electron's field is starting to rotate due to this negative work function acting on the transformers, forcing the electrons to curl or to rotate into Dirac hyperspace to become a complex number. What happens to the real part of the electric current? Well, it starts to diminish. So in other words, the real current diminishes, but the complex current emerges. But it doesn't emerge in our real 3D space. It emerges in complex space. That's our J component here. Our square root of a negative 1 represents space. So again, stating that what's observed on the typical amp meter is a significant reduction of the real electric current. It begins to vanish. Ammeters or amp meters cannot measure complex current. See, all our instrumentation, folks, can only measure real power, real voltage, and real current. It cannot measure something that doesn't exist in real space, but exists in complex space. We can't measure anything in complex space, but we can look at the effect that occurs in real 3D space. And so what we see is that the real current starts to drop. Okay? So, amp meters cannot measure complex current. Therefore, the real input current appears to vanish. Given a complex magnetic field density, comes the square root of a negative 1, calculations show the field energy in a given volume of space around the transformer, okay, around the wire that's producing a magnetic field. This field energy becomes negative, okay, which satisfies the negative energy solution of the Dirac equation, okay, negative E, negative energy. Because the equation works perfectly, folks, because really what we're dealing with, and I got into it earlier in the show here, where I told you that the electron is basically nothing, all right? The electron is nothing more than a spinning vortex of Planck's, what's generally referred to as Planck's spheres, okay? That's what Nassim Harriman gets into. He likes to talk about Planck's spheres, and what fills a proton are Planck's spheres. And I'm extending his idea, his concept, that what's generally referred to as the charge carrier isn't really the electron, folks. Even though an electron can have either a positive charge or a negative charge, who really knows what that is, right? Well, it turns out to be attributed to the Planck sphere. The Planck sphere is the charge carrier, all right? The Planck sphere is a charge carrier. And you can kind of think of as the electron as a collection of these Planck spheres, but it can have a charge of either a positive or a negative charge, okay? And the negative charge is what is in our real 3D space. And those electrons have they're associated with angular momentum. They call that spin. And so they have angular momentum. It's basically a ball of nothing spinning at very high rates of speed, all right? And that has angular momentum. And so we basically have two components of an electron, which is nothing. It has no volume. That's the way the calculations work out. And you can actually look this up on the internet. When you look at quantum physics and the construction of the electron, and physicists generally really don't talk about this because they want to take a particle and make it real. But guess what? It isn't real. It's nothing. It's basically an electron, a positron, atoms. They're nothing. But these spinning balls, they're like a vortex. Okay, a vortex of nothing on the inside. There's no field, no electric field, no magnetic field. There's no mass. All the mass is on the outside of that electron. That's what we're dealing with here. So the spin of the electron, the angular momentum of the electron, and the charge, which can be attributed to the Planck sphere, can either be positive or negative. Now, if it's negative, it exists. And there was some argument about that, too, because they would like to make that charge positive, not negative for the electron. They would like to make that positive. But wait a minute, don't they call that a positron? Well, guess what? What does all the work in your electric circuits are electrons that have this negative charge. And that goes all the way back to, I believe it's, who was it? It was either Franklin or it may have been Benjamin Franklin. You have to read it in the Hodgson papers because there's some argument about that. They would like to make that rather than a negative charge, a positive charge, because when we do our calculations in electrical engineering, we always use the positive charge carrier, but we know those are electrons and they're not positrons flowing through those circuits, okay? Is that clear? So that's what they teach in school, okay? They got to get your brain spinning there. But they would like to make that positive, okay? But it's not positive, it's negative. All right. Okay, so we're dealing with Planck spheres that are the charge carrier. And it appears that these Planck spheres, very, very tiny particles, it's like the fabric of space itself. Well, what about the electromagnetic ether? You know, here we're dealing with electron-positron pairs. Yes, we do have an ether, but there is a substructure below that, a very fine, what appears to be a material of some sort, and that's your charge carrier. And it can either be positive or negative, which is really, when we talk about positive charge, negative charge, poles, south poles, those are electrons in motion, produce your magnetic fields. But this positive and negative charge appears to be related to time. So in other words, what we call the negative charge is time forward. The positive charge is time reversed. So when we look at Feynman's, Stuckelberg's, what is it, conjecture or theory or something, which was published, I think, back in the 50s, Feynman stated that the positron, which carries a positive charge, is a time-reverse particle. Well, when we look at it within the context of Dirac space, the Dirac theory here, what we're working with, how that fits into what we're doing, he's partially correct. Feynman is partially correct with this. In other words, the charge carrier, okay, the charge component of the Planck sphere is time-reversed. It's a time-reversed component. The negative component of the electron is time forward. The positron, positive charge, is time reverse. It's the reversal of that. Okay. All right. So here we start to introduce time reversal, and that's what we have with the Dirac theory. And what we're working with here at Aurora Tech is time reversal. This is the complex. I'm describing the complex domain, all right, where this field is curling into complex space. That is really your time reversed component. Now, the Hindus call this the mirrored universe. If you watch the movie Doctor Strange, they talk quite a bit about this, the mirrored universe. It's a mirror of our real 3D universe is mirrored into this other space. Well, we can represent that as a complex number. And that's where our field is curling into. So we can access, we have a means by which to access this other universe that is at right angles to ours, the square root of a negative one. We have the means by which to do that by forcing these electrons to curl or rotate right into this hyperspace. And incidentally, Star Trek refers to this as subspace, which I find rather interesting. You know, I'm trying to get Aurora to get her to lecture about the real story behind Star Trek. And it's utterly fascinating, folks. Utterly fascinating. It is based in truth. Okay. The series, the Star Trek series, was so amazing. You know, when it first appeared on television back when? In the mid-60s? Talking about warp drive, you know, all this incredible technology that seems so real, doesn't it? Was actually based on a UFO researcher. And this is what I'm trying to get Aurora to lecture on. Maybe at Extraordinary Tech. We'll see how it goes, you know. She can probably talk about the real origins of Star Trek. That'll probably be the title of her talk, The Real Origin of Star Trek. All right. So this is where we get into dampening fields and that sort of thing. But getting back to my abstract here. All right. I left off, where did I leave off at? I left off at, given a complex magnetic field density, all right, this is your JB component, square root of negative 1 times the flux density. So we're dealing with complex space that the magnetic field has curled into, rotated into. Calculations show that the field energy in a given volume of space becomes negative. The math works. Okay? You can work with complex numbers using our classical equations. And I'll show this, folks, in a lecture. I'm working on a paper here that shows how the electron can rotate into this hyperspace. The field energy, because that's what we're really dealing with the electron. The field of the electron can only exist on the outside of the electron. The electric magnetic fields, the mass of the electron can only exist on the outside of the electron. And it actually manifests, the mass of the electron manifests in what's called the ether surrounding the electron. Okay, that these are your electron-positron pairs. They can absorb and then dump the angular momentum. That's what the mass is of the electron, is the angular momentum of that spinning vortex of energy. And that energy is angular momentum, and it can transfer through the ether that way. And that's how we see light. Light is nothing more than angular momentum. That's all it is. Okay, so getting back to this write-up here, the negative energy solution of the drag, it's the space around the electron, and that's what we're talking with and talking about here. And that's what Tom Barron got into was, you know, he calls it vacuum engineering. Okay, engineering space-time, energy from the vacuum. This is absolutely true. This is what I'm finding out here. The electron is nothing, just a spinning ball that only has surface area but no volume, the charge is on the outside of the electron. The mass of the electron is the angular momentum of that electron that gets transferred, okay, from E post to E post. So the field energy is the mass of the electron, all right? The mass of the electron exists as the field energy of that electron. This is what the calculation shows, that the field energy in a given volume of space around that electron, del dot B equals zero. That means that the flux entering a given volume of space, the same flux enters and leaves. Okay? So the del dot B of flux entering and leaving that volume of space is essentially the same. Okay? And that volume of space, the energy in that volume of space, which is really the mass of that electron of angular momentum, can be negative. You can have a negative field energy, which satisfies the negative energy solution of the Dirac equation, minus E. This field is referred to as an electromagnetic dampening field and is present around the transformer. Okay. Now, even if you have a partial damping effect occurring, you're going to end up with a complex equation that has both real and imaginary components to it. And that when you go and figure out what the energy is, okay, you can still have a positive number there, or it can be a negative number when you figure out what the field energy is there. So this field energy, but it's going to be reduced. Okay, that's what I'm getting at here. In other words, the force is still there. You can have negative energy, but yet a force is still present. Okay? And that can act on other electrons. That's the whole point of this, is that that force, even though it can be a negative energetic force, it's still there. And so that's why you have this damping effect that occurs. This field is referred to as an electromagnetic dampening field and is present around the transformer. Since the output power of the transformer drives a real load, okay, now we're looking at the output circuit, which, for example, can be connected to a resistor, all right, the output power of the transformer drives a real load. So that means that the current's going to be real. Even though I have a complex current on the input, that force is still acting on those electrons, okay, in the output coil. The force is still there. That's the whole idea behind a dampening field, is that the force, whether it's real or complex or a combination of both, that force is still acting on the electron. Okay? Since the output power of the transformer, T1, drives a real load, the output electric current is real. Okay? So again, we're looking at a complex input current, a real output current drives the load. Therefore, efficiencies greatly exceeding 100% are measured. This permits the construction of self-sustainable free energy over unity devices with phenomenally large observable power gains. This lecture will show how consistent and valid using ordinary classical analysis works at the macro scale as well as at the quantum level. Okay, so that's what I'll be talking about in July, is that the mathematics is perfectly consistent with what's actually happening and can actually explain what's happening. you know, whether it's at the macro scale or at the quantum level of the of electrons. So this is the what the free energy effect is. This is what I'm describing as free energy. Now, some people may look at this as like a sleight of hand or something. It's like, wait a minute. We know that we have to supply, if we're going to get an output of a kilowatt, we have to at least put in a kilowatt of power, assuming, of course, the transformer is ideal. It's an ideal transformer. What you put in is what you get out. Yes, that's true. All right. Because, you see, we still see that with free energy technology. That rule has not changed. It's just that we're kind of bending the rule into complex space, but the forces remain the same, okay? The force of a complex electric current is still going to produce the same force acting on that output supply. So we're putting in a kilowatt of power, but it's not real power. It's complex power. And so when you do the calculations, you find out, wait a minute, there's no power. This is what Floyd Sweet observed with his transformer. What was he putting in, like a milliwatt? He was putting in a milliwatt and getting a kilowatt out of his transformer. And it just doesn't add up, right? Well, the thing is that he's putting in a kilowatt, okay? But it's not a kilowatt of real power. Now, you can kind of think of this as, well, that's a sleight of hand, right? That's the card trick that's happening here. The card trick is that, okay, we're putting in a kilowatt. We're getting a kilowatt out. But it's not a kilowatt of real power. You can't measure complex power on your meters. You can't measure it. You're only going to measure what's the residual real power that you're putting in. And, of course, in Floyd Sweet's case, you're looking at a milliwatt of power that he's putting in, and yet he was driving a kilowatt load with it. What's the trickery here? What's the sleight of hand? Well, it's the thing is that you're still putting a kilowatt in, but it's a kilowatt of what? It's not real. It's complex power. Those forces, the complex calculations, still produces the same forces that act on the output current. Okay, so you put a milliwatt, but a kilowatt of complex numbers. The force still acts the same, you know, on your electrons on the output circuit, and you get a kilowatt out. But once you understand what this concept is, you know, of working with complex space, and it works perfectly with the mathematics that we have already. We don't have to change a thing, folks. You can still work with the same equations. And that's what I'm going to show in the conference, is that even though you're working with complex space, okay, what Star Trek calls subspace, the numbers still work out the same in the equations. You can use the same equations and get the same, and get these amazing results. So that's basically the physics in a nutshell. The nutshell version of the physics of free energy over unity transformers. And that's what I'll be talking about July. And of course, that's what we observe on the bench. We observe this phenomena occurring on the bench, where power apparently comes out of nowhere. We see a drop in the input power, and yet the output power, there's a slight increase on the output power. You know, our transformer's doing something that's rather remarkable or something impossible. So that's what we're working on here at Aurora Tech, is this amazing technology. Now, the second lecture that I will be getting into at this conference is another subject that's just dear to my heart. And that, of course, and I'm finally able to talk about this. You know, I first presented this idea at a conference that was held in Italy, of all places. It was a space conference, and I believe it was last year. And of course, they loved it and wanted me to fly all the way to Italy. And I didn't really have the dime for that. I had no dime to get to Italy for this presentation. So all that I can do was a poster presentation, which is what they mainly asked for. And I provided them a poster of a warp drive engine and how that works. And they loved it, truly loved it. But what's happening here in July? All right, at the Coffee Conference. Now, this is Tom Vallone's conference, which is a co-conference with the Tesla Tech Conference, the Extraordinary Technology Conference. Coffee, Conference on Future Energy. Tom invited me to speak at. And the title of this one, of this lecture, is Developing Practical Warp Drive Engine Technology. Okay, now that's a mouthful right there. How do you plan to produce this rabbit right out of the hat, right? All right. This research is really based on some experiments that I've done. I replicated. You know, of course, the Boyd-Bushman experiment. There's a video on that. And the other experiment had to do with what's called the Barnett effect. And you, the listener, you can look up Barnett effect, okay? Why this volume keeps going low. Okay, it's called the Barnett effect. So if you type in Barnett, I think that's with two T's, effect. Just type in wiki. It's Wikipedia. There's a Wikipedia. Okay, it's called the Barnett effect, B-A-R-N-E-T-T. Effect. You'll find it in Wikipedia. What is the Barnett effect? This is very interesting, folks. This effect was discovered, it says here, it was predicted back in 1908, but the experiment occurred about 7 years later, 1915, by Samuel Barnett. And it reads here under the Barnett effect. The Barnett effect is the magnetization of an uncharged body when spun on its axis. It was discovered by an American physicist by the name of Samuel Barnett in 1915. And he's got an equation here, and it says an uncharged object rotating with angular velocity omega tends to spontaneously magnetize when the magnetization given by this equation, it's a rotating, what he's doing here is rotating a gyroscope made of brass, okay? The magnetization occurs parallel to the axis of spin. Okay, so it emerges out of the axis, right? The Barnett was motivated by a prediction by Owen Richardson back in 1908, later named the Einstein de Haas effect. Okay, you can look that one up. Einstein de Haas effect. That magnetizing a ferromagnet can induce mechanical rotation He instead looked for the opposite effect. That is, that spinning a ferromagnet could change its magnetization. He established the effect with a long series of experiments between 1908 and 1915. And you can also see something called the London moment. Okay. Now, interesting enough, when you look at experiments like the Nazi Bell device, where you have counter-rotating opposing field action occurring, this, of course, is the Barnett effect. And the idea here is that you can take an existing magnetic field and amplify that field through rotation. And so a researcher back in the 1950s, who actually received funding from all people, such as Bill Lear from Learjet, funding this researcher by the name of Larry Wilson, who built a counter-rotating opposing field device. And this, of course, produced an anti-gravitational effect. Now, this is what I'll be getting into with this lecture that's coming up in July, Developing Practical Warp Drive Engine Technology. And so what we're getting into here, folks, is I'll just read the abstract. And it reads, vacuum polarization of the Lorentz electromagnetic ether is a critical concept towards understanding how to design and develop practical warp drive engines. Now, where are we getting this concept from? Well, this, of course, was written about in D.L. Hodgson. You can read about it in his paper, The Lorentz Electromagnetic Ether. And, of course, we're talking about vacuum polarization of this ether. The ether is understood to be made of polarizable boson spin zero one-dimensional electron-positron pairs known as EPOS. The warpage or bending due to the vacuum polarization causes the EPOS to become boson spin one pairs with angular momentum called EPOS. Now, this gets back to the angular momentum that I talked about with the electron, right? That the electron has spin, it's sitting there rotating, and it's able to transfer that angular momentum, okay, to its the surrounding Lorentz electromagnetic ether. That's the EPOS, electron-positron pairs. And they start to line up these pairs, okay, around electrons, for example. And so due to the polarization of these electrons, because electrons have positive and negative magnetic fields, okay, they're able to line up. So you have a vacuum polarizing effect here. In other words, the ethers will start to line up. And so what you get is a field phenomena, a flux field phenomena. And yes, flux is for real. It does form these lines of this electromagnetic ether. These electron-positron pairs will line up. And so you have polarization of this ether occurring with electrons, for example. Okay, so the boson spin 1 is a very special configuration of the electron-positron pair. So in other words, it can accept the angular momentum from the electron, okay, and acquire the EPOS, the electron-positron pair can acquire that angular momentum, but only up to a certain energy level, okay, because angular momentum is energy that can be absorbed by the EPOS, and as long as it remains below a certain critical number, it must dump that angular momentum to the next EPOS in the chain of flux, you see. So we're seeing a mass transfer occurring of the angular momentum of the electron, that the mass of the electron is in the field of the electron, okay, as angular momentum that's being dumped from E post to E post to E post in that chain, okay? So it is dumping the angular momentum, the mass. So you have a flow at the speed of light of that angular momentum from E post to E post to E post in a chain, in a flux chain. So really the mass of the electron is flowing at the speed of light from E post to E post. Okay, that's where the mass of the electron is. That's why I can say in my write-up here of the physics of free energy, where I talked about calculations show that the field energy in a given volume of space can become negative, which then satisfies the negative energy solution of the Dirac equation. The field energy is really the mass of that electron. Okay? And that mass can either be positive or negative, can take on a negative mass. So that field energy, whether it's positive or negative, is really the mass of that electron. Okay, so then we get back to this. So we have, now what I'm driving at is that everything is consistent here and works mathematically. Now the warp pitcher bending due to the vacuum polarization causes the E post to become a boson spin 1 pair with angular momentum. And this is called an EFOS, which is an electron-positron pair photon. So a photon is nothing more than an EPOS with angular momentum. It acquired this angular momentum from the electron, and it's being dumped from pair to pair to pair to pair in the flux line. Okay. This can be accomplished using either electric or magnetic forces. So we see this dumping of angular momentum, okay? And it can be either electric or magnetic forces, okay? We can have an electric force or we can have a magnetic force or a combination of both forces, okay? An example of this, let's get into an example, is the electric vacuum polarization in the Byfield Brown effect in the 1920s. Okay, these two researchers, Byfield and Brown, came up with this effect, and a lot of people know about this. That is an example of a warp drive engine, okay, using the electric force is the Byfield Brown effect. What's an example of the magnetic force? An example of the magnetic vacuum polarization is the German Nazi Bell device, which was developed back in the 1930s. Okay, simply by engineering the vacuum, using these forces causes either compression, producing a negative space-time curvature, or a refraction, a rarefaction, producing a positive space-time curvature. So it's how you produce, how you either compress space-time or using this rarefaction technique, okay, which is a positive space-time curvature, which in turn creates what is known as the Alcubierre warp field signature, which was talked about back in 1994. It's the Alcubierre warp field signature produces a negative space-time curvature in front of your craft, positive space-time curvature behind your craft, creating the means by which space-time between the two effects creates a fall forward scenario. You don't feel that motion at all because you have your own little pocket of space-time between the curvatures. Whether it's negative or positive, you have your little little space-time curvature between, and you don't feel any inertial effects. There's no acceleration effects or deceleration effects from that. So this in turn creates what is known as the Akubere warp field signature. This is the essential idea towards understanding faster than light interstellar space travel. And that, ladies and gentlemen, will be the subject of my second lecture, and that will be given at COFFEE, the Conference on Future Energy, in July. So if you plan on attending, I suggest you reserve your hotel reservations ASAP, and because it's going to fill up quickly. Of course, both Steve and Tom, they have very popular conferences, and a lot of people are going to be attending this year. And of course, I will be giving a lecture at both conferences this year. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, let's take a short break and we'll be right back to wrap up tonight's show. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Vortex Network News. And I'm your host this evening, Dr. Houdini. All right, we're back. You're listening to Vortex Network News. I am your host, Dr. Houdini. Aurora's taking the night off. And we are going to be at an event in Sedona. Let's see, what does it say here? It's called Cosmic Origins. And that is an event in Sedona, May 26th through the 28th. So it's end of May, folks. Aurora and I, we have a table. We will have a table at this conference, and the conference is held at the Creative Life Center. All right, Cosmic Origins. What is that? It's end of May here. It's Memorial Day weekend in Sedona. And the write-up here says that explore humanity's cosmic origins, May 26th to the 28th in Sedona. Join indigenous elders and some of the world's top researchers of ancient civilizations at the Cosmic Origins Conference. Boy, that sounds great, doesn't it? So Aurora and I, we will be there. We have a table. So if you are coming to this event, be sure to stop by our table and say hi. So what are they doing at this conference? Well, they share new findings related to cosmology and interconnectivity of the Earth's people. Indigenous cultures throughout the world convey knowledge that isn't taught in history class, and recent scientific research is validating these teachings. Are North America's native cultures related to ancient Egypt? Hey, now that's a subject that Aurora has been talking about for quite some time. Again, are North American native cultures related to ancient Egypt? Are we living in a time of great change and transition? What is on the horizon? And how can we prepare? Boy, if this isn't a hot subject, I don't know what is. But the speakers at this conference will be Dr. Robert Schock, Robert Bouval, William Henry, Regina Meredith, Ders Hertak, Clifford Mahudi will be there. Ellen Steinfeld and Gary Osborne. They're going to be talking about a fascinating subject that is near and dear to Roy's and my heart. Oh, yeah. So where's this website? Well, first of all, you can go to vortexnetworknews.com and you will see the link that'll take you to this website. Now, it's going to be difficult trying to find a hotel there, folks. Roy and I just managed to find one in Cottonwood, of all places. So, if you do plan to attend this event, the hotel prices are... and so, it is... well, let's just go to the website vortexnetworknews.com. Just scroll down and you'll see a link called Cosmic Origins. Just click on that link and it takes you to their website, which is World Views Media. Is, of course, hosting this event. It's called Cosmic Origins 2017. And it's May 26th to the 28th. Aurora and I will have a table there. So be sure to stop by and say hi. And it's going to be an incredible lecture, cutting edge. Of course, Aurora and I have been talking about this for a number of years, that the... North America's native cultures. Now, that's the Hopi and the Zuni tribes, mainly of northern Arizona. When they looked at their DNA, they said, hey, wait a minute. This is Egyptian DNA. What's going on here? And of course, they found these Egyptian artifacts in the Grand Canyon. You can look that up on the internet. Kincaid, I believe, back in 1908. Reported in the Phoenix Gazette that they discovered Egyptian artifacts in the Grand Canyon. And the other interesting little tidbit that was covered up back in the 80s when Aurora first moved here to Phoenix, she turned on the evening news and there was this very odd story. This was back in the early 80s when they were digging structures here in downtown Phoenix to build the high-rises, parking space for the high-rises. As they dug down, they discovered Egyptian artifacts. Whoa! Egyptian artifacts here in Phoenix. So they dug down into the what do they call that? I forget what they call the soil here in the Phoenix area, but it's all the runoff from all the mountains, okay, filled it all in. So they dug down about 20 or 30 feet and started running across all these Egyptian artifacts, and that was reported only one evening on the evening news and never again. It was never heard of again here. So Egyptian artifacts found in Phoenix. So Aurora heard that one, which was very interesting. And so here we got a conference talking about origins in the Arizona Grand Canyon area here. So this is going to be incredibly interesting. And of course, Aurora and I will be there. So it's coming up end of the month here, May 26th through the 28th. Okay, so the link is over there at Vortex Network News. I believe there is a link at Aurora Tech. Go to news, scroll down, and you'll see a Cosmic Origins banner, which will take you to the same. This is World Views Media. Okay. All right. So we have conferences coming up here. Check out the Aurora Tech products page. I added some more products with pricing information. That's single piece pricing. So if you were to buy one piece, that's the full list price. And I should be adding in some PayPal links that you can purchase them online. That should be happening here very, very soon. And let's see what else is going on. I can't think of anything else here. And of course, the conference is in July. And I think Aurora will be joining us next week. She took the night off. And so I think I'm just going to wrap up the show here just a few minutes early. And I want to thank you all for joining me tonight. I'm Dr. Houdini. You're listening to Vortex News. And join us next week, folks. Same time, same station. And we'll see you next week. Have a great week, everyone.